Natural Resource Subcommittee to order, and welcome everyone here. We expect Senator Dukes very shortly. I would like to start by having introductions and maybe discuss a little bit about your interest in this committee and district. So, Representative Trigger, would you like to start?
Thank you, Senator Medley. Wayne Krieger from District 1, South Coast. Actually, it's not the South Coast anymore because I've got part of the
good part of the state,
Douglas County, which they don't consider themselves part of the coast, but redistricting, that's where I ended up. I served here under Representative Morgan last time as our chair. It was interesting as we went through this process to see, I think I might call it the bureaucracy and the complexity of multiple agencies and their overlap of authority, and maybe in some instances even a turf protection about who really did have the authority, and they didn't know. And just like Senator, you and I have talked about, trying to make a process that people can find their way through that doesn't get so encumbered and the expense isn't there, I think is one of the things that I think we need to do. Have a real concern about the fact that all of our natural resource agencies, which provide the livability that we continue to protect in Oregon, have a little less than 2% of the budget, but yet it's valued. And within that 2% of the budget comes about 80% of the complaints from constituents. So it's kind of disproportionate how it affects people. We affect people, what we do in these agencies, in their daily lives and their ability to make a living, and the ability of a business to exist and prosper. So looking forward to this session. I think we've got a lot of work to do. I think that's it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. my district goes from the mouth of the Columbia to the confluence of the Columbia with the Willamette. So I have a long, narrow district that Senator Dukes is very familiar with that runs along the Columbia River. And within my district, there are a number of folks engaged in agriculture. Included in my district is Savis Island, which is a huge agricultural production area within 15 miles of Portland. We have lots of river issues, fish issues, forestry issues, state forests within the district that have been controversial with respect to their management. So the district that I have the privilege of representing is affected by many of these agencies, and hopefully, based on my knowledge of the district, I'll be able to advise the committee, and conversely, based on what I learn here, I'll be more useful to my constituents.
Great. Senator Morgan.
Thank you, Senator Medley. My district is House District 2, and it's the south central part of Douglas County from Roseburg down to the county line, a little bit of Josephine County and a little bit of Jackson County. A rural district, again, echoing Representative Johnson's comments, one that is profoundly impacted by the actions that take place in the 14 land-based agencies that we do the budgets for. This is actually the third time I've had the honor of serving on this committee. I served on it as a member, in fact, sitting where Representative Krieger sits right now in the 99th session. In the 01 session, I had the honor of chairing it, and so now I'm recycled for the third time on the committee and giving Senator Medley an easy act to follow here on this one. I have a huge interest in Endangered Species Act issues and Clean Water Act issues and Clean Air Act issues, and I think all of us do. That this looks like by and far a pretty rural group of folks here. I don't know about the committee administrator, but my guess is there's some of that there too. That we followed these issues from the policy perspective and from the ways and means, the budget perspective, and that I think this is a great group to tackle the area that we're working on here.
Representative Morgan, I would judge that you've been appointed to this committee because of your experience, but on the other hand, when you look at the makeup of the other committee, maybe you need some training from some coasties. because we really have the coastal caucus.
I am definitely holding down the inland part of the whole equation here. So does that mean this committee's all wet?
We're certainly damp.
Salty.
Salty. Senator Dukes.
I guess, are we just talking about ourselves, or
just introducing in your thoughts?
Joan Dukes. I represent Columbia, class of Tillamook, rural Western Washington County, a little piece of Multnomah County, and have been involved in natural resource issues as long as I've been in the building, because you can't represent those counties without being involved in them one way or another, and I suppose more involved the longer I've been here. And I would echo Representative Morgan's comment. Sitting at the table are the people who have done a whole lot of the pieces that have been done over the last few years and a few sessions. Some of you started in the House and moved to the Senate, and some of us started in the Senate and stayed there. But I think that it's an excellent committee and people with a lot of background here.
Thank you. I'm extremely pleased with the committee we have. Exactly. And when you look at the experience that we're dealing with and the issues that we're dealing with and the budgets that we're going to have to be working into, I couldn't ask for a better committee to work with here. I should give you some of my background. I've born and raised on a family farm in Coos Bay. Our family started out with dairy farms. Of course, all the coastal dairies, most of them have a tree on the hillside, and that's how they survive. Went to Oregon State, graduated in food science, came home and managed our Coquille Ranch. And at that time, we had four dairies, and we ended up shutting down, my brothers and I and father and uncle. It was a fourth generation operation at that time. But we shut down all the dairies, and one brother and myself managed the cattle end of it, and two other brothers managed the timber end of it. I've since sold out of the family business, but I couldn't stand it, so I bought back into a little timber company, and in which three of us are now managing 500 acres of timber. But I've served on several soil and water districts, the watershed associations. I've served two terms on the Oregon Soil and Water Commission, plus several commodity groups. You're absolutely right, Senator Dukes. I think most of us have served on committees since we've been here in the natural resource area. I have as well. Started with the House Water Committee, which sponsored and brought in the Oregon Salmon Plan. And then since then, I've co-chaired to last year where I chaired the Senate Natural Resource Committee. So I feel very comfortable dealing with these issues. I have not served on Ways and Means. I did my first 2 years in Natural Resource. I did not last year, so I'm doing a little bit of catch-up, but I really don't think it's changed all that much. So I look forward to a productive time. As you all probably know, they have reduced our time about 6 weeks, and so we're going to have to stay very focused, and Sue will go through some of the procedure that the co-chairs have outlined for us, and we're going to articulate the process and move ahead as rapidly as we can. As Representative Morgan stated in her committee this morning, education, she's anticipating hearings where we can, at times that are more acceptable to the public to come in. I think we need to do the same thing. And I'd like to play it by ear, and if you have suggestions where there's a lot of constituents that would like to be on the record, we can do that. My guess is it's going to be very difficult to do that during the day. We'll probably have to either do it in the evenings or on weekends. And I would prefer evenings. But I think we need to be open to that, because the issues are so large and their process is so condensed, I think we just need to hear from as many people as we can. So I think we've kind of got the process laid out in front of us. We've got a lot of work to do. Thankfully, we're not dealing with a whole lot of general fund. That's the good part. But the impact of what our budgets are dealing with has a huge impact on the state. We're dealing with about 14 budgets, or it is 14 budgets, I think. And other fiscal and fee bills, which we know will be coming our way. So I think we got our plate full, and I think we've got a good group here to work through it. Sue, would you like to introduce yourself and maybe your staff?
Oh, Mr. Chair, I didn't ask any of the other natural resource staff to come in, but I can give you their names, or I can go get them and introduce them to you. I think most of you are probably familiar with them. Their names will sound familiar. I'm Sue McGlashan with the Legislative Fiscal Office. I'll be the scheduler and coordinator this session for this subcommittee. But unlike previous biennia, where we had one expert in the office on the natural resource budgets, with maybe some of the smaller budgets farmed out to an analyst, there are four of us now that you'll see popping in and out of this subcommittee. So I don't claim to be the expert at all in this area. There are other very highly qualified staff in our office who will be able to answer questions that you have about their assigned budgets. So what I've done for today's meeting is provide you with these notebooks kind of to orient you to the subcommittee process. I know that all of you have experience in this, and so it's probably redundant. Plus, you've probably also, some of you sat in meetings this morning, so I'll try to be brief. And if you have any questions, of course, don't hesitate to ask.
So, can you introduce our report?
Let me make sure I get the name for last name. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for pointing that out. That's Karen Segrist, who is the subcommittee staff.
Welcome.
And she'll be with us this session as well. Anyway, you'll see in front of all the tabs, there's the list of the what's in each tab, and I'll just briefly point out what's in there. The first one has to do with the subcommittee rules, and you're probably aware that this morning the full committee adopted a temporary rule. And what this temporary rule does, it allows for public hearings and public testimony, but it does not provide for any work sessions. So at this point, there will be no work sessions until further notice, until those permanent rules are adopted. And then the second tab is a list of agency bills that you would normally see assigned to this subcommittee. I think currently only one is assigned, and that would be House Bill 5035, the Land Use Board of Appeals budget bill. And that's one of my assigned agencies. There had been a public hearing scheduled for tomorrow, but that has been canceled. So if you look in the front of your binder in the little sleeve, I provided for you a potential schedule for the rest of this week. And you'll see that the Tuesday meeting has been canceled. So we'll hear have the public hearing on that bill on Wednesday. And I've got listed down there possible work session. It's possible that there'll be, you know, a permanent rule adopted in time for us to still have that work session. So I just left it on the schedule. And the same for the Columbia River Gorge Commission bill on Thursday.
Mr. Chair, I want to make sure I understand. So the committee is canceled for tomorrow?
That's correct.
Okay.
There's no meeting tomorrow. And there's also no meeting scheduled for Friday.
Mr. Chair?
Mm-hmm. Morgan?
Are we actually going to be able to go to work session, given that we don't have the backout on the salary increases and things like that yet?
Mr. Chair and Representative Morgan, for some of the smaller agencies where we can do the adjustment manually, we'll probably be able to go to work session. But you're right, for those agencies where it would just be very time-consuming for the analyst to do those adjustments manually, the work sessions will have to either be delayed, or you can work the budget to a certain point and then put it on the shelf until we have those adjustments available.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
One more scheduling question. When you said there's no subcommittee on Friday, I didn't think there was anyway.
That's correct.
Okay,
yeah.
Good.
There
are
no meetings scheduled on Fridays.
Cool. Thank you.
I should say that I don't know about the rest of you, but it got a little confusing last Friday. You know, we had our full ways and meetings, and then we had floor sessions, and I've talked to President Courtney and said that, you know, I appreciate trying to get us out of here early on Fridays, but really our staffs need to know that ahead of time, because I had another appointment with President of the University of Oregon, and of course we missed the floor session, some of us did at least, because of the committee meeting. So hopefully we'll get this straightened out and not have this moving around. I think it's very difficult. I'm sure your staffs are giving you as much trouble as mine are, and hopefully it'll work out. Also want to say, I meant to mention earlier that we're going to have to really communicate very closely in this committee. There's going to be a lot of information, and I don't like surprises. I don't like to surprise other people, and I appreciate if other people don't surprise me, because I think it's just going to help us stay together and work together much better and be much more efficient. And, you know, that goes from my point and with the staff of canceling meetings and all these kind of things. So we'll try to let everyone know just as soon as possible. But there's going to be issues come up that are concerns. I really want to know about those and try to plan for them and get the right people here. If you have suggestions on people you'd like to come testify, or you want items on the agenda that you don't see, I want to know about that so that we can get it scheduled in. I think in the long run, that's going to save us a lot of time.
Mr. Chair, are you going to be able to get the schedule to us in some kind of forward-looking time frame so we can find out if we want to have people come in that kind of way?
Oh, the agendas, you mean?
Yeah.
Yes. Well, Sue, we can talk about that.
Mr. Chair, I heard this morning in the Education Subcommittee about some preference to get the next week's schedule fairly early on, rather than wait till Thursday or Friday of the preceding week. And I can, you know, do that for you if you have, you know, if you'd like to get it. Like maybe Tuesday of the week before. There sometimes are changes. We're trying not to change these schedules too much because of the compressed time frame, and also once we change it in one subcommittee, there's sometimes a domino effect in our office because of all the analysts being, you know, scheduled, and there can be conflicts if we move things around. And so I think it's very doable to get you the weekly schedules probably Tuesday of the preceding week, if you think that would be sufficient, just with the caveat that things can change, and as you know, if that does happen, I would get you the revised schedules as soon as possible.
I think that if I can elaborate on the question, schedules are one thing, but the agendas, so we have a sense of what.
I'm sorry, I was kind of calling this the schedule, but I meant the agenda. Okay. That's what I assumed that you were talking about, was the agenda. Okay.
Okay, go ahead.
In the third, I'll finish that second tab. Again, it gives you the potential assigned bills, the agencies, and then the LFO analysts. We've just got the last names there, and I would just like to point out that it's Paul Siebert, Susie Jordan, and Rick Olson, who are the other analysts, and I provided their telephone numbers for you. And the next tab is something that you should have received last Friday in the full Ways and Means Committee overview, so I didn't want to spend really any time on that because it would be pretty repetitious. But I thought it might be nice if you could have this in the notebook just for referencing.
Not sure we were all there Friday. Okay. Does anyone have any questions on this material? Are we okay?
The next tab pertains to the copies of the governor's budget notebooks that you'll be receiving for each agency as it comes in to present its budget. And this is just to kind of refresh your memories about what's in the notebook. It's a fairly high-level description, but just so if you were looking for something in particular, rather than leafing through the whole notebook, this might help you zero in on which tabs you would like to go to maybe look in there and see if you can find what it is that you're after. And then in tab number 5, this is the format that we'll be following, hopefully, for the presentations to the subcommittees on the budgets. It's very similar to last session. There are actually two formats. There's one for most agencies, and then there's another one for large, complex agencies, but we don't have any of those in this subcommittee, so I just provided this one format for you. There are a few changes, but nothing really substantive. In the first section, the orientation and background that LFO provides, in item A, 4, and 5, we used to provide copies of audit reports and interim studies, but that can get to be very voluminous, and it may not be something that you're interested in reading. So what we'll be doing this time is providing you with lists, and if you're interested in any particular report, we can get you copies of those reports. And then,
Sue, would it be possible to get summaries of the recommendations?
Mr. Chair, I think for most of the interim reports and studies, they probably have executive summaries. So if you wanted us to photocopy those executive summaries and provide them to you, we could probably do that, probably with the audit reports as well. There's a section, I'm sure, on recommendations, and we could get those to you if you would prefer.
I think that'd be helpful.
Okay. And then in regards to the agency overview in Roman numeral 2 and then the more detailed presentation in Roman numeral 4, while there's a lot of information you can see that's supposed to be provided, the agencies have been instructed in a joint memo from LFO and BAM that they are to try to be brief and succinct and focus on why the agency exists, how it's been performing, how it uses its budget, and what outcomes could be expected given the budget request. So they'll probably be providing a lot of information in, you know, handouts, but they won't necessarily go over all of it because of the compressed time frames and what they've been instructed to do in terms of their presentation, and also where the subcommittee would like to have the agency focus some discussion. And also for the smaller agencies, you'll probably see them collapse sections 2 and 4 because they often just have one program. So a lot of it would be redundant otherwise. And then tab 6 is a copy of the co-chair budget plan. And it starts out with some kind of guiding principles. Rather than the 14% growth that's assumed in the governor's budget, it assumes a 10% revenue growth for 2003-05. It also assumes providing for a 3% ending balance, and that would be a little bit over $300 million. Another principle is that the subcommittee is to build a prioritized add-back list. And then, in general, inflation adjustments will be eliminated and salaries will be frozen, including cost of living adjustments and merit increases. More specifically, there are some things listed there under the budget review process that it is to include. And under personnel issues, vacancies will be reviewed, and it's assumed that those subject to the hiring freeze are eliminated unless the agency can justify continuation for 03-05. And then there will also be a review of other vacancies not subject to the hiring freeze. And agencies will be submitting these lists of their current vacancies.
I think, again, we discussed this morning, but we also discussed it on the full, an interest in truing up these budgets. There's some agencies that have got positions unfilled, and those funds are used for other needs. And we just seem to, we need to, I think there's a real interest in the co-chairs and myself as well and others that we prove up those budgets, true them up. Representative Krieger first.
How is the early retirements going to affect what we do? We've had more people retire like in the last 60 days than normally in 6 months. And those are coming out of varied agencies. And, of course, it's all the older top-end people, probably management. I just kind of wonder, is that our opportunity there?
That should be part of our report.
That's correct, Mr. Chair and Representative Krieger. Any current vacancies that the agencies have would be presented to the subcommittee for their review. So those recent retirements would also be included.
Okay. Senator Johnson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So would you mind repeating? I want to take you back up into the budget target strategy. Mm-hmm. Just repeat what you said about the eliminate inflation adjustments and salary freezes. I just want to make sure that I understood you.
Okay. Well, as you know, there in the what used to be called current service level budget, there would be percentages applied to things like S&S with assumed inflation rates, and those things will be eliminated, as well as any cost of living adjustments on salaries and also merit increases under the state personnel system. Those would be eliminated also. So basically the salaries that are in place July 1st, 2003 would carry through the whole biennium.
Senator Morgan.
Mr. Chair, I think that there also is an issue here that we kind of covered in that because of the short time frame that the new governor's had to develop his budget and the complexity of rolling out the automatic increases in the PICS system, that a lot of a number of the agency budgets that came forward in his budgeting process still has inflation adjustments figured into them. And so part of what we have to do is back that out.
Right. The next step under the more detailed budget review process that's listed there pertains to FTE and positions. There's the assumption that the number of FTE and positions will be frozen, and then there would be a review of establishment of any new FTE, which I would just point out that LFO does that anyway in its usual analysis. We analyze policy packages that include requests for new positions in FTE and require the agency to justify those requests. And then another piece of information that the agencies will be presenting will be management to staff ratios, and the agencies will be explaining and justifying their ratios, whatever those may be.
Mr. Chair, are we going to be getting any contextual information about management staff ratios so we know whether this is way out in left field or, slim or fat or where?
Mr. Chair and Representative Morgan, that's a good question, and I'll follow up on that to see if we can get that information for you. I know in the past there's been a rule of thumb, and sometimes agencies can justify deviating from that rule of thumb depending on what their program looks like. But I'll follow up on that and get you some information.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Dukes.
I'm curious. Some of us ran into a situation in the last session, and DAS was going to be dealing with it and take it over. But given the change in leadership, I don't know what happened, and that was reclassifications.
Mm-hmm. That's right. I remember
that. At a time when we freeze salaries and freeze positions and that sort of thing, that's usually the time when there are even more requests for reclassifications. Mm-hmm. And I'm still struggling with the fact that an agency head can work out of class, but, those kinds of things we discovered last session. So, and Mike Greenfield said they would begin reviewing every one of those. We thought they had been, and then suddenly we discovered they weren't getting them all. So I don't know where we are with reclassifications.
I'd like to think
that somebody was looking at them.
Mr. Chair and members, I think that that's probably a very appropriate subject for the Department of Administrative Services to talk about when they come before, I think it's the General Government Subcommittee. And I can, again, follow up on that and see if they plan on presenting that information, and if not, why not, and see where things are in that process.
Well, but also, when budgets come before us, I would like to know whether there had been any reclassification since the last budget we saw.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
We did review the report that DAS put out in the Interim Audit Committee, and I think there was a lot of a general lack of satisfaction about how they got their ability to get to the bottom of the issue. So I would hope it would be an issue that would come up in general government, and I assume that we'll be touching on it again when we review the Marine Board budget.
Catch one up here real quick.
That was a point. Uh-huh. Spent days playing games.
But we got it.
That was what started it all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was.
And there is, I think, a kind of an interesting file on that. It was an issue that was dealt with by the E-Board chairs, too, during the interim. And they sent a letter to the audit committee urging us to keep on the issue.
So there was still an attempt?
Oh, dear me.
Okay, the next thing on that sheet talks about prioritized lists, and the agencies were directed to do this prioritization. They got the direction in a letter, again, a joint letter from LFO and BAM this month. And based on the governor's, the 2003-05 governor's budget, they're supposed to prioritize their programs and include things like fund type and the number of FTE. And the presentation format back in tab 5 doesn't address that. And so I wanted to maybe put before the subcommittee that it would probably benefit you if that kind of information was presented fairly early on to kind of set a context for you as the agency presented its budget. So that's something for you to think about, where you might like to have them provide that information, since it's not in this format.
Thank you. So I'd like it to be very clear so that we don't have to each time ask them to present that to us. And even go farther, realize we're saying prioritize your list, but make it clear that if we run into further budget reductions, they have outlined pretty articulately where they would suggest they'd like to make those reductions. Because, let's face it, they're the people that have to run the program. And if we're, you know, I felt that very strongly in our special sessions, that many times we really didn't have a grasp on what the impact was going to be to the overall operation of the department's programs. And so I would much prefer to see them be part of the team that's doing that, more part of the team, I should say. Did you have a question?
Well, just kind of a comment, because I think that when we look at where we are right now in revenue projections, we're really in kind of a crapshoot situation, whether we're going up, going down, staying straight. And all of us, I think, are pretty shell-shocked after having been through 4 rebalance sessions and 1 veto override session. And the thought of coming back here again in the second year of the biennium, or at the end of the first year of the biennium, and having to do again what we just did, I think is really low on everybody's list of fun things to do. And so what I'm thinking is, you know, I look at the instructions from the co-chairs to build an add-back list, mm-hmm. but even assuming a 10% revenue growth may end up being overly optimistic. And I see down here, they have a part called post-signee die forecast, where they talk about use prioritized list for further reductions. And I'm wondering if there needs to be in a list that covers, I can see having a list that covers add backs if we end up with more money. But how do we arrive at the priorities if we have to do more takeaways? And we almost need a takeaway priority list, too.
Well, if they prioritize all of their programs right down to the lowest detail, it should cover it. I think our challenge is to make sure they do that job and do it thoroughly.
Mr. Chair, that's my understanding, that that would be one of the uses of that prioritized programs list, is that you could look at that if further reductions are necessary.
So what we're talking about here is then prioritizing all of the programs in the agencies, not just which you would add back first, have some kind of a short list there.
What I understand the process to be, Representative Morgan, is that there are actually two separate lists. There's the agency's prioritized program list, all the way down to, you know, the least
1 to 500
right valuable program, and then there's the subcommittee's add back list. And so, if further reductions are necessary, you could go to the agency's prioritized programs list for those that you haven't already perhaps eliminated.
So, if I might, Mr. Chair, what happens if we find ourselves in a situation with the agency's list where we don't agree with their priorities? That going back to some of the things that happened with economies that were taken in the special sessions that we didn't have any control over targeting. How do we deal with whether we think the priorities that the agency puts forward should be different?
Mr. Chair and Representative Morgan, I think that's not a question that's been answered. And I think it's, you know, a discussion that needs to be certainly had if an agency comes forward with a list that you absolutely, you know, don't agree with or don't agree with in part, and see if some agreement can be reached between the agency and the subcommittee to have them reprioritize those programs and get that on the record.
I think also we have a challenge in that most of us, if not all of us, have served on some of those budget committees during the special sessions. And in some cases, we simply looked at some monies that they had not spent yet. And so we took those off the list. That doesn't mean that those programs aren't important. And there might have been a lot of reasons why they hadn't been spent and why they weren't going to be spent. In the rest of the biennium. But that doesn't mean that they're not something that we shouldn't be looking at going to the new budget. It's going to be hard to pull some of that out, I would think.
Okay. The next bullet there talks about performance measures, and that issue is included in the presentation format, so I won't belabor those things. Except to say that this time the subcommittee is being asked to formally adopt the performance measures presented by the agency and as modified by the subcommittee, if the subcommittee wants to see some modification.
But Mr. Fisher, there was an interesting point raised on this morning in the education sub, and that was it may benefit the committee to have part of the performance measure presentation be a description of how the tracking mechanism works, what goes into the formula to actually track things. And one of the examples that I put forward, I don't know if there's a performance measure that talks about the efficiencies of hatcheries, but if there is, most certainly trying to figure out whether that performance measure is really measuring the efficiency of hatcheries would be predicated on what the formula was for collecting the information that goes into saying good, bad, or mediocre. So I think that if we could get a look at how they're going to gauge the outcomes, that would be valuable information for us to have.
Well, I'm going to be very eager to see the performance measure piece of this. I had the dubious distinction in serving in an agency that will remain unnamed during the advent of performance measures. And the performance measures and the measuring thereof became so cumbersome that all the activity went into the creation and the tracking. Very little energy went into the outcome. And I'm dubious of a situation where you've got 23 measures and you don't know at the end of the day if you've provided effective use of public money, if you've served taxpayers well across the counter. It seems to me that the tendency towards esoterica in performance measures obfuscates what we really want to try to understand. Is it an efficient expenditure of public money, and are the public being well served by the activities? I think there was a tendency to measure quantity rather than quality. And so I'll be very eager to see how cumbersome these measures are and if they really are management tools both for the agency heads and for the legislature to tell us if we're getting bang for the buck.
Mr. Chair, if I might interject too, that I think that one of the frustrations that we had with performance measures in natural resources in the past was that they're pretty useless in the information that they gather. But I have been assured that there's been a lot of work done on them over the interim, so I'm curious to see what's coming out of this.
At the risk of beating a dying horse, one of the other problems, I think, is a kind of disconnect between the expectations of the legislature and some of the management tools and agency performance. Case in point, Oregon Economic and Community Development is charged with creating jobs. A Secretary of State's audit appeared that said they don't know how to create jobs. A big study was commissioned by the legislature. At the end of the big study, great dissatisfaction with the methodology in the study. And I'm worried at the end of the day, $75,000 later, everybody goes, well, we tried, and they walk away from it. It seems to me that there are certain fundamentals that common sense would dictate that the legislature would expect agencies to do. Economic development creates jobs. Seems to me to be not rocket science. And yet, when an audit also confirms that those job gains are not measurable, a tendency to just say, we looked at it and not expect some remediation at the agency level. Something has to happen at the end of all of this studying and agreement that we're not getting what we need. So far I haven't seen that with OECDD, even though that's not within the purview of this agency, I mean, of this subcommittee. It may be instructive in that I was part of the criticism. We created the task force. We spent $75,000 studying it, and now we have a report that's being repudiated by at least some of the members of the task force. And the only thing that got measured is $75,000 in public money disappearing. So,
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Dukes.
You can take a subject near and dear to the hearts of every one of us on the subcommittee that is under the purview of the subcommittee. Look at hatcheries. They've been studied and studied, and we still don't, I don't think we know a whole lot more. Some things have changed internal to the hatcheries, but I don't know that any of us, if pressed, could say, are we doing a better job? And we know we are doing a better job today than we were 5 years ago. So, yeah, we do it in the natural resource agencies as well. We want to believe that it's getting better, but we don't have any answers.
I think everyone on this committee, I'm pretty certain, deals with the same type of constituent issues that I do, of lack of service from our state agencies. And I think we, particularly on this committee, are in an excellent position to deal with our agencies as they come to us, to really, really hear from them. What kind of service are they giving? Are they helping our constituents and get through the process and meet the requirements and the standards? And something that I've been interested in for a long time, and been really quite frustrated that we can never seem to get that mindset that the reason we're all here is to service people and not to be a burden and not to regulate and over-regulate and be a burden to people. So I think the timing is perfect for us, and it's not specific, I guess, in the outlines that the co-chairs gave the departments, but I think it's something that I'm interested in, and I think this committee ought to be very interested in every agency that we see, to get a very clear report as to how are they meeting the public's needs and in what kind of time frames are they getting that job done. So I think it's a big challenge for us, but one I'm looking forward to.
Mr. Chair, members, the next bullet item says program comparison, and that pertains to looking at the agency's programs and seeing if there are any similar programs in other states and providing information on those programs. And to my knowledge, the level of detail hasn't been specified, whether it's, you know, what the other states' budgets may look like, number of FTE, similarities, differences, that kind of thing. But to the extent that that information is available, we'll have the agencies present it, or LFO will present it as well. And just a caveat that usually this might be the kind of thing that would be done during an interim where you could do a really in-depth analysis to bring to light any differences and similarities, and time probably won't permit that kind of in-depth analysis, so the information may be a little limited in its usefulness.
Mr. Chair, I'm going along with what you were just talking about. I don't know why this one brought it to mind, but it would be interesting to me in natural resource agencies to listen to them, each of them talk about how they play well with other agencies. Because it seems to me that natural resource agencies have had a real problem with that over time, and that each of them does whatever the heck the natural resource thing is. And I don't know what the redundancies are, but I'd like to know how they facilitate things getting done in their actions. And I would assume that some of the FTE in each of their budgets is allocated for that, for working. I mean, certainly with ODFW, they have folks who, you know, do the Columbia River Compact and stuff, which is part other agencies and part another state. But I'd like to know sort of, I mean, in terms of serving the public, how they do that, more than just turning out fish or whatever the, you know, what all the agencies we've got here, but how do they work with other agencies in doing that? I know I've got a hatchery where they're having problems with DEQ, so I don't know how we play well, how well we play, whatever.
I think that's a great point, because they're not going to give a good service if they're not coordinating with other federal and state and federal agencies, because that's one of the problems we hear all the time.
Redundant. If we've got two or three agencies that are doing the same sorts of things, maybe we don't need quite that many people doing it.
Mr. Chair,
yes.
Just
Senator Johnson.
I follow on what Senator Duke said. In some cases, it's not just coordination with federal and local. As sort of an overview, it's even the difference between one county to the next. I've had constituent issues where a DEQ inspection in Clatsop County is not a DEQ inspection in Columbia County. And that's very confusing for people who are trying to stay within the rules, but they don't know what the rules are from one jurisdiction to the next. And if it's a state agency, it seems to me that the rules ought to be applied standardly across all the counties.
If we quit interrupting, you'd break.
Yeah, we'll be here till tomorrow.
Almost done, Mr. Chair. That last section has to do with future forecast adjustments, and that just gives some general direction that, you know, if there are changes in the March and May forecast, then the co-chair target levels will be reviewed based on those changes in the forecast, and there would still be that goal of maintaining the 3% ending balance, but based on the revised forecast. And then post-sign-e-die forecast, there's a proposed plan to establish interim budget review, an interim budget review committee to prioritize programs further if necessary. And if revenues are positive, you could use the prioritized list for potential add-backs. If they decrease, use the list for further reductions. There's a bullet there that says plan for special session to either restore funding if amounts attain trigger levels, which to my knowledge have not been defined yet, or make reductions to rebalance. And then in tab 7, that just gives you a summary of the natural resource.
Tab 7? Tab 6.
Oh. I inserted yours on the wrong page.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Apologize for that. It's either in your tab 6 or your tab 7. Did you have two? Okay. Well, I wanted to make sure you got one. This is entitled Schedule 5 Modified at the top. But what it gives you is by the natural resource program area, what is in the governor's budget, but adjusted for the savings assumed by taking out the merits. And that in this budget, that's an assumed savings of about $1.2 million. But assuming a 10% general fund growth, the target for the subcommittee in terms of general fund savings overall would be about $5.6 million. And this would include the 3% that the co-chairs have as a target and then an additional 1% that could be used for subcommittee priorities. So that's just to give you an idea of what you're aiming for in terms of budget savings.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Duke.
So that means we're going to carve $5.6 million in general fund money out of these budgets? That's what I thought she said. Just checking.
That's your target.
If we get lucky, we can put 1.4% of it back. If we get real lucky.
Okay.
And then just a few housekeeping things.
One thing that may be worthwhile noting is that all the budget areas are hit with this, not just natural resources.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's just harder with natural resources because there's less there, so they're really carving out programs.
Yeah, but when you're in, like, education, it's a really big number. That
yeah.
You
yeah. 5 million didn't look so bad then, huh?
And the people holler very loud. For good reason, yeah.
I'm sure you're all familiar with budget notes. The direction this time is that, as last time, that the budget notes require co-chair approval, and they're not to reflect policy decisions, but they have to be budget related. And the subcommittee chairs should get any of your budget note requests so that they can know about them before they're brought to the attention of the co-chairs. And that's the process this time. One thing to make you aware of if you haven't already heard this, the microphones are rather sensitive, so especially in hearing room F, just to be aware of that if you're having any side conversations while they're on, they could be picked up, so you may want to turn around and not face the microphone.
Get some of those little ketchup cups.
Or we requested in the Education Committee this morning that we have notepads like we have in the past.
Oh.
So we pass notes instead. They're much safer, I think.
As long as you destroy the notes afterwards. And then finally, the assembly will pay for coffee service, but only if you request it. If I notice there's no coffee today, I just need to let staff know if you do want to have coffee. And if you're interested in the cost, it's $7 for one craft, which holds approximately 7 cups. So it's about $1 a cup. Not that you would pay for it, but it's just in your budget deliberations, give you an idea what that coffee is costing.
Coffee?
Mr. Chair, to start us out on a fiscally conservative step, I think I would at least offer to pass on the coffee.
I rarely drink it, so.
Okay.
I avoid hot caffeine after lunch and switch to the cold stuff. So.
Coffee, if you watch it, you pour it in. Bubbles get kind of a lavender color and they get larger, which means something's still happening. So I don't drink that coffee.
I think you have your answers.
Thank you very much.
But we appreciate you.
Have to ask. And I think that pretty much wraps it up for the orientation, unless you have some other comments or questions.
Well, we did have a place on at the end of our agenda
right.
to talk about goals. I think we covered a lot of them. Mm-hmm. So, see, we're making a lot of notes there, but I did want some extra time just if we wanted to discuss what our expectations are on this committee. But lots of challenges, as we said earlier. But if anyone has any issues they'd like to bring up at this time, why, it'd be a good time to do it.
I kind of covered mine. My opening statement, more than about myself, I talked about my people and how they're affected by what we do, what these agencies do, how they go about doing their business.
Well, I think it's going to come up in probably every budget we look at.
Mr. Chair, I think that the point that has been made several times, and I think we've made it thousands of times since I've been in the system, about the need for coordination amongst the natural resource areas is a huge issue that, you know, in my estimation, there only are a finite number of things that you can check some application for. And after you've done everything once, you're being redundant. But we aren't, I don't think, in a very good position to do the overview part of this. And that's what's real frustrating, is that we take a look at one agency at a time, and we don't have the arena to take a look at all of them in terms of their interrelatedness at the same time. So, you know, I am also just incredibly frustrated with the... our lack of success at merging functions more seamlessly and eliminating duplications. But I think that without the help of the governor's office on this, that it's going to be very difficult for us to get our arms around it.
I was just going to say, Representative Morgan, that I'm meeting with the governor tomorrow at 1:30, and that's an issue I really want to bring up, because the information is available. We just don't need to document it every time they go to a different department. I think that's something that we can hopefully make some progress on this session. Anything else? So our next meeting will be Wednesday at 1 o'clock.
No coffee.
With no coffee, but lots of water. Nothing else. We'll adjourn. Thank you.